good evening, everyone. This is Luke Harvey. And here we are, barely a week before Christmas. The time sure goes by fast, doesn't it? Well, here we are. Now I'm recording this on the 16th of the month, December 2025. And we've got a lot of stories to cover today. But first, let me just introduce myself. In case there are a few people listening that are not familiar with this, this program was largely started by my wife, Elizabeth, who, sad to say, passed away last February. And we were on several different venues, but for the last many years, we've been pretty much of an independent station. Fortunately, our producer, Todd, has been kind enough to keep the program going on Global Star Network. And you can hear us on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio. The original program goes out Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on a frequency of 4.840 megahertz shortwave. Or you can hear it right on their website, WWCR.com, at that time. The program is repeated Saturday mornings. And now, can I think of the frequency? I may have to look that up for you. Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. I think it's 7.490. Pretty sure about that, 7.490. And you can also listen to us anytime by going to our website and listening to the archives. And the website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. Our program is called The Divided Kingdom. So naturally enough, the website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. And if you go to that website, you'll see that there are listings for program archives, and you can jump down to any date you want to pick and play the program. We're a program that has a Christian emphasis, basically a news program, a little bit of Christian emphasis thrown in. And what I try to do is each week pick some of the stories that are the most interesting, and it won't be dated. Since we do have to pre-record the program, I don't want to take anything too much that's changing suddenly, although today I'm afraid we're going to have to do that because we've got some big stories. This has been a violent week, and any of you paying attention to the news know what I mean. We had a shooting that is still unsolved at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. We had the deaths of Rob Reiner, famous actor and director, and his wife. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. And we had the horrendous attack on Jewish folks in Australia at Bondi Beach. So we'll cover those and some other stories. Let's lead off today with a story that appeared on Monday, the 15th, in the New York Post. So I'll kind of update it a little bit with what I now know. But this will be a somewhat of a changing story, although at the moment it seems to be pretty much clear cut. But we don't know that for sure. The headline in the New York Post reads, Rob Reiner, wife Michelle, had throat slit by family member during heated argument, according to report. This was authored by Patrick Riley, and as I said, was published in the New York Post, December 15th, 2025. Slain Hollywood icon Rob Reiner and his wife were found with their throat slit, with their daughter telling cops that a dangerous, that's in quotes, dangerous relative should be a suspect, according to a report Monday. And as I said, we know a little more about that now, so I'll update that as we go along. Continuing with the article, the legendary director and his wife of 36 years, Michelle Singer Reiner, were found Sunday afternoon by their daughter, Romy, who immediately told cops the killer was another family member. TMZ reported. Their horrified daughter quickly told investigators that a relative, quote, should be a suspect, unquote, because they're, quote, dangerous, sources told the outlet, suggesting it came during a heated argument. The A Few Good Men director, age 78, and a 68-year-old wife, Michelle, were both found with their throats slit, according to the outlet. Sources told the Post that stab wounds to their throats were among multiple injuries. The couple's 32-year-old son, Nick Reiner, is being eyed as a person of interest, sources earlier told the Post, noting that a knife was used in the attack. Well, now this is a little speaking, let me interrupt. We now know that Nick Reiner, their son, has been arrested and charged. And I heard at one point the bail had been set for $4 million, but now I think the bail has been revoked and he's held without bail. So apparently they have the thought that he is the perpetrator, or at least there's strong evidence to that effect. Going back to the article, the director and his wife were found dead in their home in Brentwood, which I believe is either in Los Angeles or very close to it, on Sunday afternoon. So that would have been the 14th of December, 2025. Officials did not initially identify the Reiners as the alleged murder victims, but the family later confirmed the horrific news. A family spokesperson said in a statement, quote, "It is with profound sorrow that we announce the tragic passing of Michelle and Rob Reiner. We are heartbroken by the sudden loss, and we ask for privacy during this unbelievably difficult time," unquote. A neighbor told the Post that comedian Billy Crystal, a longtime friend of Reiner's, was spotted arriving at the home on Sunday night after the news broke. Crystal, quote, "looked like he was about to cry," according to ABC 7, which said that Larry David was also seen at the residence after the news broke. Rob Reiner married photographer Michelle Singer in 1989, and he had been previously married to the late actress and filmmaker Penny Marshall. The director was behind some of Hollywood's most beloved films, including The Princess Bride, Stand By Me, This Is Spinal Tap, Misery, and A Few Good Men. He met his wife while filming the romantic comedy classic When Harry Met Sally. And just jumping down a little bit, of course, Rob Reiner rose to fame playing Mike, nicknamed Meathead Stivic, on the CBS comedy All in the Family, for which he won 2 Emmy Awards. And the son, Nick, has been troubled with drug addiction and homelessness for some time. And another source had said, this may have been on Fox News broadcast, that the son, Nick, quarreled with his parents at a party the night before. So, again, much pleased to be found out about this, and this story will be, no doubt, expanding as time goes on. All right. Now, let's jump to a Fox News story. FBI arrests 4 alleged members of radical pro-Palestinian group accused of plotting New Year's Eve bombings. The subheadline says, "Individuals self-identified as members of the Turtle Island Liberation Front." And this is by Ashley Conahan, Fox News, December 15, 2025. Federal authorities say they disrupted a credible terrorist threat over the weekend, arresting 4 alleged members of a radical pro-Palestinian extremist group accused of planning coordinated New Year's Eve bombings in Los Angeles. The FBI told Fox News Digital that the members self-identified as part of a radical offshoot of the Turtle Island Liberation Front, TILF for short, an extremist group motivated by pro-Palestinian, anti-law enforcement, and anti-government ideology. According to the FBI, they were allegedly planning coordinated bombing attacks on New Year's Eve using improvised explosive devices, that is, IEDs, targeting 5 separate locations across Los Angeles. The agency said that the four were arrested in Lucerne Valley, where they were believed to be preparing to test explosive devices ahead of the planned attacks. They have each been charged with conspiracy and possession of destructive devices. The FBI said Monday that a fifth individual believed to be connected to the same TILF extremist group, and again that's short for Turtle Island Liberation Front, that fifth member was arrested in New Orleans for allegedly planning a separate attack. A TILF Instagram account said its founding chapter is in L.A., and its goal is to free, quote, Turtle Island, unquote, an indigenous name used to refer to North America from the, quote, illegal American empire. That is, to free that from the illegal American empire, unquote. And the account posted the words Free Palestine, Free Hawaii, Free Puerto Rico. And it continued, freeing the world from American imperialism is the only way to a safe and peaceful future. Unquote. All right, so this is Lou again. We got a lot of these far-out groups, radical groups in this country, and around the world for that matter. And it's good that at least one has been defeated, but you wonder how many more there are out there wanting all kinds of devious and violent, what's the word, actions. Well, how about another plot? This one in Europe from the Western Journal, also December 15th, this one by Jack Davis. Literal war on Christmas. Five Africans, Middle Easterners arrested over plot to murder, quote, as many people as possible, unquote, at Christmas market. 1 year after a deadly attack on a German Christmas market, police in the country have detained five men linked to a plot to replicate the crime. The plot called for driving a vehicle into a Christmas market, as was done a year ago in Magdeburg, killing six people. This according to the BBC. Three Moroccans, an Egyptian, and a Syrian were detained on Friday. Officials said an Islamist motive was suspected. The 56-year-old Egyptian was alleged to have, quote, called for a vehicle attack with the aim of killing or injuring as many people as possible, unquote. The German newspaper Bild, B-I-L-D, said the Egyptian man was a local imam. Police said the Moroccans linked to the plot were allegedly going to be the ones to implement the plan. And here's another quote. Police said the Moroccan man, or men, ages 30, 28, and 22, were arrested, accused of having agreed to commit murder, while the Syrian man, a 37-year-old, was accused of encouraging the suspects in that decision to commit the crime, the BBC reported. Officials indicated that a Christmas market in the Dingolfing Landau area, northeast of Munich, was the likely target. Joachim Herrmann, Bavarian state interior minister, said the, quote, excellent cooperation between our security services averted a potentially Islamist-motivated attack, unquote. Christmas markets have become targets ever since 2016, when a failed Tunisian asylum seeker drove a truck into a Berlin Christmas market, killing 12 people and injuring 56. In the last year's Magdeburg attack, more than 300 people were injured, in addition to the six people killed, according to DW. And apparently DW is a news outlet. Fox News noted that Germany has beefed up security for the popular markets, citing a 43% increase in security spending on such events. David Ross, head of production at Berlin's Gendarmenmarkt, said, quote, the requirements have become increasingly stringent, unquote. Some officials said the events may have run their course in a world of potential threats. And here we have a quote by Alan Mendoza, the executive director of the Henry Jackson Society. He said, "The real question is why European governments are tolerating a situation where they must deploy extraordinary security just so people can safely celebrate a tradition that has been central to European life for centuries," unquote. They're responding to the threat, but they're not pushing back against the radical extremists causing it. Why are Europeans forced to navigate layers of security instead of authorities making life difficult for the people who are spreading hatred and posing the threat, he said. And Mendoza went on to say, "Europe needs an aggressive strategy that targets the radicals, imprisoning them, deporting them if they're not citizens, because you can't secure your way out of this forever. Every year the security will increase unless the root causes are addressed. Europeans are increasingly fed up with what's happening to their societies. And if the current leaders won't deliver transformative change, voters will eventually choose leaders who will," he said. And that, in a vague sort of way, reminds me of the situation in Germany in the early 1930s. The government was unable to cope with certain things. They had several governments over a period of just a year or two. And who took over? Why, Adolf Hitler. We know the rest. And these governments in Europe have been tolerating these radicals coming in, unlimited, at least in some areas, unlimited immigration, much of it by these Islamists who preach a radical form of Islam, not the peaceful kind that's gotten along for more than 1,000 years, and for a long time lived peacefully with the Jewish folks in what was then Palestine. But now, certain radicals have just completely taken over. And we see that in Australia. But I think I'll take a little break from that and give you some other information closer to home. A few things that came from the New York Post. This is thanks to one of my good friends, and I won't give a name, but a great guy who's been sending me many, many good clippings. I've mentioned it before, and I got a whole pile of them just a day or two ago, up to date, and all kinds of interesting topics. I wish I had 3 or 4 hours to cover them all. My voice wouldn't hold up, so if I tried to do it all at once. But here's one. You may have heard a little bit about this. This gives you a little bit more detail. This appeared in the New York Post Friday, December 5th. So, not that long ago. It says, "Student's Gender Essay, F, Wiped Out." What's that mean? Well, a University of Oklahoma student's final grade won't be affected after she controversially flunked a Bible-based essay on gender that was assigned by a trans instructor, triggering widespread backlash. Samantha Fulmecki, 20, filed a discrimination complaint with the school last week after she was given an F for arguing in her psychology class paper that belief in multiple genders was demonic. The school has since revealed the failing grade will have no bearing on Fulmecki's academic standing after the course's professor, Mel Kurth, was placed on leave and administrators launched a probe into the junior's complaint. So, we hear these stories. I'm just slow speaking now. We hear all these stories by college students that if you express conservative views, your grade is going to go down. It's not fair. It's not right. And it's not good academic procedures. But a lot of these professors, of course, are radical, or at least far left, if not completely radical. And they do not want to hear about anything to do with the Bible, religion, God, or conservative values, for that matter. And this is the case here. This, I believe, a teaching assistant, but we'll read on and see what it says. girl didn't just mark her down a little bit, gave her an out-and-out F just because of the content of what she wrote. Not based upon the validity of what she wrote, but based upon not liking the content. Well, let's read on. Again, this is from the New York Post. It was by Ryan King. I'm not sure I said that before. The school has since revealed the failing grade. Okay, I read that. Well, it had no bearing on Fulminecki's academic standing. The controversial assignment was supposed to account for 3% of Fulminecki's final grade. For the assignment, Kurth, a transgender grad student who uses she/they pronouns, had asked students to pen a 650-word response to an academic article that weighed whether conformity with gender norms was associated with popularity or bullying among middle school students. In her essay, Fulminecki noted she was frustrated by the premise of the study because she doesn't believe that there are more than two genders based on her understanding of the Bible. Quote, society pushing the lie that there are multiple genders and everyone should be whatever they want to be is demonic and severely harms American youth, she wrote, adding that promoting the belief in multiple genders would lead society to move, quote, farther from God's original plan for humans. She went on, I live my life based on this truth and firmly believe that there would be less gender issues and insecurities in children if they were raised knowing that they do not belong to themselves, but they belong to the Lord. Fulminecki received 0 points for her paper. The instructor noted they failed the psych major on the ground that she neglected to address the prompt and relied. She neglected to address the prompt and relied on personal ideology than empirical evidence. Those are in quotes. And let's see now. The next quote is also by the grad assistant. Please note that I am not deducting points because you have certain beliefs, the instructor wrote in feedback, adding that the paper did not answer the question for the assignment. Kurth doubled down, arguing Fulminecki's paper, quote, contradicts itself, heavily uses personal ideology over empirical evidence in a scientific class, and is at times offensive, unquote. To call an entire group of people demonic is highly offensive, especially a minority-ized population, Kurth wrote before urging the student to try to apply some more perspective and empathy in her work moving forward, unquote. The feedback and failing grade ignited a viral firestorm after the school's chapter of Turning Point USA blasted out the news on social media. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt was among those to weigh in, posting on X that the situation was deeply concerning. Those are his words, deeply concerning. And he said, I'm calling on the OU, that is Oklahoma University, regents to review the results of the investigation and ensure other students are not unfairly penalized for their beliefs, unquote. And again, that was the words of the governor, Kevin Stitt. As the backlash continued to mount, the school confirmed it has launched an investigation into the students' discrimination claims. And the university said in a statement, quote, the University of Oklahoma takes seriously concerns involving First Amendment rights, certainly including religious freedoms. Now, interesting thing. We'll see how that comes up. All right. Now, we're going to move on to another New York Post article that appeared December 6th by Patrick Riley. This one, the title says, Free to Pray Again. Now, not P-R-A-Y, P-R-E-Y. And his picture of United States Attorney General Pam Bondi and a little inset with the convicted rapist, Abdemahat Billy Mohammed. All right, let's see what this is about. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi ripped Minnesota for allowing a convicted serial rapist and Somali immigrant to walk free just months before he committed another horrific kidnapping and rape. Ab Dimahat, and I guess his Billy is B-I-L-L-E, Mohammed, who legally entered the U.S. during the Obama administration. And let me interrupt for just a second. Yep, another one of these Obama things. Or Biden. Even more so for Biden. But this one was Obama. Going on, it says, this man is charged with kidnapping and sexually assaulting a woman over several days in a hotel room in September. Mohammed, 28, was only free because of sweet deals he received from state courts in two previous rape cases, including one involving a child. And Pam Bondi, U.S. Attorney General, stated, quote, he committed a rape of a child, a horrific rape, in 2017. Then he committed another rape in 2024. He's arrested in state court, lives in the Minneapolis area the entire time. Bondi rallied Friday on Fox News. She went on, he's convicted in state court of both rapes, and they let him walk out the door on probation. Double rapist, pled to him, walked out the door. Then under our administration, he committed a new rape, she said. He's arrested, he's in federal custody. Well, time doesn't permit us to go into all of this, but it gives some more details about that, about his conviction, and about this idea that he just got a slap in the wrist, let's see if I can skip down. For one of the rapes, he received a sentence of 5 years probation and 364 days in the Hennepin County workhouse, but received credit for time served. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison for the attack on a teenager, but the sentence was stayed for 5 years, meaning he served no prison time. So he was put right out on the street where he could rape again and whatever else he felt like doing. Now, I'm going to leave that there, but I'll say a few words of my own to get my 2 cents worth in. If you don't punish people for crimes, is it any wonder they commit crimes over and over again? They think they've got nothing to lose. And these dolts, these idiots, who let these kind of violent guys go, they ought to serve the time themselves. At the very least, they should be disbarred if they're lawyers. They should be impeached if they're justices or judges. And they should get some serious repercussions for turning these violent criminals out where they can prey upon the public once again. All right. I got my 2 cents worth out. Now let's jump back into some of the articles I have here. Of course, one of the biggest news stories of the weekend was this violent attack in Australia. Now, we Americans, at least this American, really can't say I know a great deal about Australia. It's a big continent. A lot of it's desert. Most of the settlements are on the coast. When it's winter up here, it's summer down there. Therefore, at this present time, it's summer. So here's a general article that just gives you the sort of the bare bones of the situation from the Washington Times. This appeared on Sunday, December 14th by Ben Wolfgang. And the headline reads, terrorists kill 15, wound dozens in brazen attack on Hanukkah celebration in Australia. Gunmen killed 15 people and wounded dozens more in a shocking assault at a Hanukkah celebration on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, on Sunday. The latest in a string of anti-Semitic attacks around the world, and one that led authorities in major U.S. cities to ramp up protection ahead of their own Hanukkah events this week. Australian authorities said the two gunmen were a father and son, ages 50 and 24. The older man was killed by police, and the other was arrested and remained in critical condition as of Sunday. One of the perpetrators was reportedly known to law enforcement, although no specific threat had been received ahead of the Hanukkah by the Sea event at one of the country's most iconic beaches. All right, let me just interrupt right there. This is Lou getting his 2 cents worth in again. If he was known by the police, what does that mean? Was he known to be violent? Was he suspected of being radicalized? What are they talking about there? They don't say, do they? Well, that would be the very first question I would ask. What's his background? What did the police know? And one of the things many of the people commented upon was the slow response of the police. I think maybe in one of the articles I have, they comment upon that. So we'll get to that. Back to this article from the Washington Times. Dramatic video footage from the scene spread across social media, including clips that appear to show a bystander tackling one of the gunmen and preventing even more bloodshed. Other footage showed people in bathing suits running from the water as shots rang out. Police also found several improvised explosive devices, that is, IEDs, in one of the men's cars, suggesting even greater violence had been a possibility. At least 42 people were confirmed wounded, police said. Australia has some of the world's strictest gun laws and has rarely confronted a mass shooting on this scale. The assault Sunday is thought to be the deadliest shooting in Australia in more than 30 years. The Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese, said he was devastated by the attack and promised to stand by the nation's Jewish community. He said, quote, "This is a targeted attack on Jewish Australians on the first day of Hanukkah, which should be a day of joy, a celebration of faith. Instead, an act of evil, anti-Semitism, and terrorism has struck the heart of our nation." Those were the words of the Prime Minister. And his name was Anthony Albanese. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio also condemned the attack, as did heads of state and officials from around the world. Mr. Rubio said, quote, "The United States strongly condemns the terrorist attack in Australia targeting a Jewish celebration. Anti-Semitism has no place in the world. Our prayers are with the victims of this horrific attack, the Jewish community, and the people of Australia," unquote. Australia is home to about 117,000 Jews. Like other nations, Australia has experienced a spike in anti-Semitic incidents since the October 7, 2023 Hamas attack in Israel and subsequent Israeli military operations in the Gaza Strip. Anti-Semitic incidents, including assaults, vandalism, threats, and intimidation, surged more than threefold since then, according to government figures, including major incidents in Sydney and Melbourne. The U.S. and other nations have had instances of significant anti-Semitic violence. In May, a gunman killed two Israeli embassy staffers in Washington, D.C. In June, an attacker used Molotov cocktails in an assault on a pro-Israel demonstration in Boulder, Colorado. There are among a host of other anti-Semitic attacks in the U.S. in recent years, even before the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. Jewish leaders around the world said the community must stand strong in the aftermath of the Sydney attack. Ronald Lauder, president of the World Jewish Congress, said in a statement, quote, "We must heighten vigilance and work in close coordination with law enforcement and security authorities to ensure that Jewish life can continue openly, safely, and without intimidation. Make no mistake, this will not break us. We will continue to stand proudly, united against all forms of violence and hate, and in unwavering solidarity with Jewish communities everywhere," unquote. And just jumping down a little bit in the same article, in New York City, Mayor Eric Adams said authorities had received no specific threats to Jewish celebrations, but he was deploying additional law enforcement out of an abundance of caution. As Mr. Adams said on X, quote, "We will continue to ensure the Jewish community can celebrate the holiday in safety, including at public menorah lightings across the city. Let us pray for the injured and stand together against hatred," unquote. Police in Miami Beach, Florida said that they have, quote, "increased our uniform presence at synagogues, schools, and other key locations citywide to help ensure the continued safety of our residents and visitors," unquote. Police in L.A. announced additional patrols for Jewish facilities, schools, synagogues, and Hanukkah events. The attack also appears to be deepening a rift between Australia and Israel. Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu said Australia's policies, including the recognition of a Palestinian state, have contributed to the rise of anti-Semitism. And then we have a little more detail. And some of this may repeat, so I'll try to just give the facts that are additional to what I've already read. This next one, and I should repeat that the preceding one was from the Western Journal by Jack Davis, December 15th. This one is from Fox News, and it reads, "Australia terror attack, 16 dead, including gunmen, after father-son duo opens fire on Jewish community." This is by Elizabeth Pritchett, Anders Hagstrom, Greg Werner of the Fox News staff, December 14th, 2025. Police say a father and son were behind a horrifying mass shooting that left 15 people dead, including one of the gunmen, and 40 people hospitalized during a Hanukkah celebration at Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. New South Wales Police Commissioner Mel Lanyon said during a press conference on Monday in Australia that it was a 50-year-old man and his 24-year-old son that carried out the attack. And I'm going to jump down to some of the things we didn't already read in the other article. The father was a licensed gun owner with 6 legally registered firearms. All 6 of the firearms had been recovered, with some being recovered at the scene. The others were located and recovered when investigators executed search warrants at 2 separate locations, police said. The commissioner told reporters Monday that the father met the eligibility criteria for a hunting license used for recreational hunting. Though unidentified, now that we'll see, is no longer true. He has been identified. But as of the time of this writing, the father was not identified. He was issued a Category AB firearms license, which allows him to possess the long firearms he registered. And let me jump down a bit. Lanyon, and Lanyon, by the way, was the, I believe, the police commissioner. Yeah, Police Commissioner Mel Lanyon of the state, excuse me, state of New South Wales, Australia. He said, that is Lanyon said, there was very little knowledge of either of these men by the authorities. The person was determined to be entitled to have a firearms license, and he had had a firearms license for a number of years, for which there were no incidents. Two IEDs, improvised explosive devices, were also found at the scene of one of the homes where search warrants were executed. They were taken into possession by a rescue and bomb disposal unit and found to be active. They were then rendered safe by police. Lanyon noted that the IEDs were rudimentary, that's his word, rudimentary or fairly basic. But he also noted he was grateful they did not detonate. Police said the victims range in age from 10 to 87 years old. The shooting happened during an annual celebration known as Hanukkah by the Sea, and it was scheduled to kick off at 5 p.m. to celebrate the first day of the Jewish holiday by lighting the first candle of the menorah. And the shooting happened at around 6:45 local time. All right. They repeat that the shooting is the worst attack against Jews since the October 7, 2023 Hamas terror attacks. Let's see if there's anything else here. I think the rest pretty much repeats what we already read. That was from Fox News, December 14th. Now, more in the nature of a commentary, we have from the New York Post, Hanukkah mass murderer reportedly identified tied to Pakistan. Explosives found in addition to firearms. This one's by Jack Davis, December 15th, 2025. The father and son who slaughtered 15 victims in Sydney, Australia, have been identified with reports saying they are linked to Pakistan. Naveed Akram, 24, was one of the gunmen, according to The Telegraph. The site reported that Akram lived in Bonny Rig in the southwest, or to the southwest of Sydney. The house was raided by police after the shooting, which left 15 victims dead, more than 40 people wounded. And Naveed Akram was critically injured while his father was shot dead by police at the scene. Newsweek described him as a, quote, Pakistani national based in Sydney, unquote, citing U.S. intelligence. The Telegraph said that based on evidence from social media posts from an Islamic center, Akram completed religious studies in 2022. Adam Ismaili, the head of the Al Murad Islamic Institute, where Akram studied, declined to comment. And the mother of the young man, defends her son, but the authorities seem to think he was definitely the one that did it. And after all, he was injured at the scene, so that pretty much suffices it, I believe. Let's see if there's anything else here. It repeats about the legally owning the guns. CBS News noted that the man who tried to tackle one of the shooters has been identified as Amin Bel Ahmed, a 43-year-old fruit vendor. Ahmed was among those wounded in the shooting. So he acted like a hero. Now, he was Islamic, so we certainly can't say that all the Islamic guys are evil. He was trying to prevent the shooting. And then we have one more, and I'll just read a portion of this one because it has some comments, a little more than, as I started to say for the other one, in the nature of a editorial kind of thing. But before I do that, I should say again that the one I just read was from, I believe, the New York Post. I didn't write that down here, but I think that's New York Post. At any rate, it was by Jack Davis. So it should be easy to trace. This one definitely is New York Post. This one is by Brendan O'Neill. Published December 14th and updated December 15th. Bondi Beach terror is exactly what globalized the Intifada means. It's official. Nowhere is safe from the scourge of Jew hatred. Not even Bondi Beach. Of Bondi Beach. On Sunday, that gorgeous stretch of sand and sea in Sydney, Australia, was visited by the great evil of anti-Semitism. World famous is the sunny, chilled-out space for surfers, sunbathers, and young lovers, it became a slaughter zone. Its golden sand was stained red with the blood of men, women, and children who were slain for one reason and one reason only. They were Jews. Two gunmen opened fire at a gathering of Jewish Australians who were celebrating the first day of Hanukkah. Their murderous spree lasted for 10 horrifying minutes, killing 15 spectators, including a rabbi, a Holocaust survivor, and a child. It feels chilling that even Bondi, one of the most visited tourist sites in Oz, is now fallen victim to the derangement of Jew phobia. I have visited Bondi many times, and I met friends there, including Jewish friends. We usually break the beach rules by sipping beers on the warm, blowing sand. The thought of that beach being overrun by a modern-day pogrom, by armed haters of humanity, hell-bent on killing Jews, it's too much to take. Australia will never be the same. That even this beach can be invaded by Jew haters should be a wake-up call for the entire West. For it confirms that the Intifada has well and truly been globalized. For more than 2 years, the appalling death cry, "Globalize the Intifada," has rung out across the West, ever since Hamas' October 7th pogrom. Now we can see its lethal impact, a growing loathing for Jews, not only in the U.S., the U.K., and Europe, but even on a hippie-ish beach down under. If you demanded we globalize the Intifada, if you damned Zionists as an evil people, if you spent the past 2 years frothing at the mouth over the demonic Jewish state, then we don't want to hear a word from you about the atrocity at Bondi. Because this is on you. Blood from the Bondi innocents is on your hands. Now, let me interrupt there for a minute. I'm sad to say that a great many of the people that I've heard on the alternative media, the internet and shortwave, sad to say, preach this constant refrain against the so-called Zionists. I have never really heard what they meant by Zionists. It seems to me that they mean Jews. They will swear up and down, "Oh, no, 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 no. We're not anti-Semitic. We're not against Jewish people. We're just against Zionists, whatever they are." But one thing that came home to me a number of years ago, probably most of you remember quite well my wife Elizabeth. Many years ago, not involving any of the present people that produce our program. I want to make that very clear. This has nothing to do with our present program. But in the old days, a long time ago, we had a program that's still in its beginning stages. And Elizabeth had read a book and interviewed a Jewish man who was the author of the book. And what did the higher up at that particular network say to Elizabeth? And he wasn't up. I think he was away at the time she did this interview. For some reason, he didn't know about it at the time, or he probably wouldn't have allowed it. But his words were, "Why did you interview that GD Jew?" Now, for us, that's it at all. He didn't use the word Zionist. He used the word Jew. And I think to him, Zionist was just a cover-up, a way to try to legitimize hatred of Jews, anti-Semitism. We didn't stay on that network very long. We got off there as soon as we could, because we are not Jew haters. And I better say right at here and now, as far as I know, I have no Jewish blood in me whatsoever. Nor did Elizabeth. So we're not saying these words. I'm not saying these words because I'm part Jewish. As far as I know, I'm not at all Jewish. But I don't know. I will just say, it seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, write to me and tell me so. But it seems to me that this word Zionist has come to be a way to cover up anti-Semitism, to pretend that you're something other than Jew haters, when that's exactly what you are. If that's not true, write to me and explain. And you can write to me, by the way, at Lou Caverly, LouCaverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like in the Bible at this time of year, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip code is 21609. That's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. It's interesting that it's Bethlehem, the little town where we live. People from all over the area, even from as far away as Baltimore, about 75 odd miles, come to get their Christmas card stamped. with that little postage stamp that says Bethlehem. Interesting little thing. Well, getting back to the article now, I'll once again skip down in the interest of time. The author, who was Brendan O'Neill, says, it was as if the barbarism of 1930s Europe had been transposed onto 21st century Australia. The dead include Eli Flanger, a British-born rabbi and father of five, and a 12-year-old girl, and Holocaust survivor, Alex Kleitman, K-L-E-Y-T-M-A-N, who died while protecting his wife. He survived the Nazi terror of 20th century Europe, but not the anti-Semitic tyranny that befell Bondi on a sunny day in 2025. But here's the thing. This act of savagery is shocking but not surprising. I was honored to give talks about anti-Semitism at synagogues in Sydney and Melbourne last year. Everyone I spoke to said the same thing. Something bad is coming. Anti-Semitism is getting worse, they said, and no one is listening to us. Australia, like the rest of the West, has been gripped by the mind fever of Israelophobia these past 2 years. Synagogues have been set on fire. Jewish schools have been daubed with graffiti. A mob gathered at the Sydney Opera House the day after the October 7th attacks chanted, F the Jews. The hard truth is that the barbarism in Bondi has been a long time coming. The Israeli haters always try to wash their hands of racist atrocities like the one at Bondi. We only hate Zionists, not Jews, they say. Is anyone still buying this? I'm not. Let's speak frankly. The fashionable and feverish hatred of the Jewish state has endangered the Jewish people. If you damn the Jewish nation as uniquely wicked, as a bloodthirsty entity, as a blight on humankind, then you have no right to be surprised when Jews get it in the neck. And if, like Zoran Mamdani, you fail to condemn that hatred, then please keep your opinions about Bondi to yourself. It displays us are utterly worthless. And there's a little bit more, but I'll stop there. That was by Brendan O'Neill, New York Post, December 14th, 2025. The title was Bondi Beach Terror is Exactly What Globalized the Intifada Means. Okay, we've got just enough time for a little bit of back-to-home domestic stuff. Fear of label emboldens criminals. This is another one from my contact in Massachusetts that sent me so many good things. This is about Governor Walz, who was running for vice president of the entire United States not so long ago. This is also by Brendan O'Neill, New York Post, Wednesday, December 3rd, 2025. Everything about the Minnesota fraud scandal is horrifying. It is shocking that armies of scammers, almost all Somali immigrants, were able to pilfer so much money from the American taxpayer. These con artists created sham nonprofits and billed the state for services they never actually provided. One of them, Feeding Our Future, promised to put food into the bellies of hungry kids. In reality, it just put money, the American people's money, into the bulging bank accounts of Somali swindlers. The grifters milked $1 billion from the state. They lived lavish lifestyles on the back of the cash they stole from hardworking Americans. And all of this happened under the nose of Governor Tim Walz. A scandal of epic proportions. Yet for me, there's one aspect of this industrial-scale robbery of the American people that feels especially chilling. When officials raised concerns about one of the Somali scams, the scammers threatened to publicly brand them as racist. You will be tied with a brush of racism, the fraudsters warned, and it will be sprawled all over the news. And it worked. The officials crumbled in the face of the scammers' shameless display of the racism card. They carried on funding what they suspected was a sketchy outfit. So desperate were they to avoid being called racist. This reveals a chilling truth, not only about Minnesota, but about the West more broadly. It speaks to the lethal power of the racism grift. It confirms that accusations of racism have become a key weapon in the armory of the duplicitous. Even the state itself can now be cowed by mere whispers of the R word. It was feeding on a future that aroused the suspicions of state officials. The Minnesota Department of Education was alarmed by the number of, quote, feeding sites, unquote, that were popping up. Yet the Somali scammers knew how to silence their doubters. Just cry racism. Okay, you get the general idea there. And it goes into some other details there, but that's the general idea. And so the scandal is finally coming out in Minnesota, and who knows where else. And I shudder to think that Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, under whose nose all of this happened, could have been the vice president, and who knows, maybe even eventually the president of the United States. So we could spare that thing. I never did figure out myself what Walz did to become a vice president. And of course, he didn't actually become vice president, but why he was even nominated for that. What was his special talent? I don't know. Well, it sounds like our time is running out. That little article, by the way, again, was by Brendan O'Neill from New York Post, December 3rd. Fear of label emboldens criminals. Well, gosh, our time is about up. So I invite you all to listen again next week. This is Lou Caravelli. Again, you can write to me, Lou Caravelli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And check out our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next week.